lower your expectations, and put on your comfy pants. You know the ones I'm talking about. It's time for the Mediocrities Podcast. Good morning. Welcome, everybody, to the Mediocrities Podcast. I am your host, Mediocrities. What's new on my mind is driving. Actually, bad drivers are on my mind. I cannot stand bad drivers. And I don't understand why it is that when you are on a freeway going full speed, most of the cars going full speed, why is it? And if you know the answer to this, I need you to reach out to me. MediocritiesPodcast@outlook.com. And you can use that for any questions, but this is the big one. This is the most important thing right now. Why, when there is a police vehicle on the road, doesn't matter if lights are on, why will a car immediately decelerate to well below the speed limit, causing everybody behind them to have to slam on their brakes? Why is that? Every time I recall having this situation come up in driver education, our teachers were telling us, make sure that you become part of the flow of traffic. Going too fast is dangerous. Going too slow is dangerous. Slamming on your brakes is dangerous. That's why you should have safe, you know, following distance and all that wonderful stuff. But when you slam on your brakes in the middle of the left lane, which is for passing, you're going to cause an accident. And not only that, but you cause good people like Mediocrities to almost spill their coffee. That, my friends, is sinful. We cannot have that. I don't want to have to clean coffee off of my car console. So if you are driving in my area, if you're on the road of Mediocrities, you need to drive with the driving skills of Mediocrities, which are excellent. None of this slam on the brakes when the cops come. Actually, by the time you see the cop has already seen you. They know where to park so that they can hit you with their little radar money-making gun and get you whenever they want to. Okay? You slamming on your brakes does nothing. It doesn't. And if you want to decelerate, to do so slowly, gradually. I don't want to have another morning like this. Can we just covenant? Let's just covenant together, though. If you are those drivers, if you're one of those drivers that likes to slam on your brakes, that you will covenant with Mediocrities this morning never to do that again. Okay? I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to have this intervention with you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And more than that, I thank God for these opportunities to grow and develop in patience. Thanks to the wonderful drivers on the freeways along my commute to work. I say that a little tongue in cheek, but in reality, I know that that's probably true. I know that that's probably why I'm on the road when I am. That's why those other cars are on the road that they are. And in the grand scheme of things, I'm not saying that they're plants or robots. I think that these are opportunities for me to grow in patience. But I'm just asking that all God's children who have driver's license drive with a little bit of common sense and reduce the number of idiotic accidents on the road. That would be fantastic. And that would make Mediocrities happy. That would probably make a lot of people happy. So I appreciate that. I think the best thing for us to do now, while I calm myself, is to listen to a commercial that I made. Okay? Now it is time to journey inside the mind of Mediocrities. It may be fun. It may be scary. It may contain wheat and soy,
Join me now, will you? Inside the mind of mediocrities.
So now we're going to look inside the mind of mediocrities, right? And since we do deal with philosophy, and if you recall from last episode, go back and listen if you didn't, you must know philosophy if you want to properly understand theology, because philosophy is your best friend, and theology is your best friend's hot sister. She will not talk to you unless you know her brother. Okay, we're clear. Good. So, thinking of philosophy, one of the most important topics that we need to understand when we're looking at philosophy, which is the love of wisdom, right? The love of wisdom we should search for and seek and conform to truth. And so I've been reading some Aquinas and thinking about truth, and especially in this world, this post-Christian world that we live in, and considering how we engage people to discuss things like truth. That's something, truth is almost, it's relative, the way that people discuss it. They think that truth is relative, and that's why you'll hear people say, live your truth, believe your truth. Well, that's silly. Truth is truth. There's no such thing as your truth or my truth or anybody's truth. There's just truth, which is why we can recognize it when it's there. And truth is, we know that we've recognized truth when our thoughts are in accord with reality, right? We need to understand reality, the reality of the situation. And that requires thought. It requires data. It requires humility to conform ourselves to what is revealed to us, right? You know, we can, when we're only looking at one piece of it, we may not really be able to see the fullness of truth. Anyway, so let me read this part from Aquinas, and it comes from the Summa, Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologiae, and I don't even really know how to describe the sections. I mean, the way that it's divided up in questions, right? But 2-2.109.1. Here's what Aquinas says. I answer that truth can be taken in two ways. First, for that reason of which a thing is said to be true, and thus truth is not a virtue, but the object or end of a virtue. Because taken in this way, truth is not a habit, which is the genus containing virtue, but a certain equality between the understanding or sign and the thing understood or signified, or again, between the thing and its rule. Secondly, truth may stand for that by which a person says what is true, in which sense one is said to be truthful. This truth or truthfulness must needs be a virtue, because to say what is true is a good act, and virtue is that which makes its possessor good and renders his action good. That's important. Here's why. Because truth's existing on two places. There's the sense in which truth is the object. I need to understand what is true, right? I need to comprehend that. You and I need to comprehend what is true, what is right. And this is important because we need to understand our world. We need to understand how we are supposed to operate in this world. God has given us faculties of reason. He has given us the ability to look at a situation and make observations, collect data, categorize things, assemble information together in our minds, and come to conclusions. If we live our lives just living in conclusions based on assumptions, then we're doing ourselves and the people around us a great disservice, right? So we must take the time to understand truth. What is true? What is right? What is just, right? So there's that one sense that truth is the object. But then there's the other sense in which we're talking about speaking about that which is true. Truthfulness, right? And that comes in the way that we communicate. And think about all the words that are based on the Latin communio. So when we talk about union, when we talk about the communion we received in the Holy Mass, when we talk about our groups of the men and women that we live and work and grow with, their community, communication, everything revolves around that communio, right? This intimacy, this union, that cannot exist unless we are both seeking truth in humility and communicating that truth accurately, completely. So what if I've grasped truth? What if I've grasped truth and I understand something so very well, but I'm a complete a-hole in the way that I explain it to someone? Or maybe I'm not an a-hole. Maybe I'm extremely nice in the way that I explain something, but I explain it incompletely or incorrectly. See, that doesn't work, because then the person who is trusting me to present truth to them is not receiving the truth which I claim to have started to understand, right? I used to say the truth that I hold, but here's the deal. I'm starting to understand that the more I understand something, the more I realize how very little I know. And I think science is a great example of that. The faith is another great example. When you look at that hierarchy of truths that we hold, by the way, I'm not charging you for this part. Ludwig Ott, Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. The introduction to this book is worth the price of buying the book itself, because it explains, at least to me, explains most clearly how the church looks at truth. You know, there are things that are kind of on the fringe. Not that they're not important, but they're not as important as something like the Holy Trinity. Something that is not as important as, say, our understanding of the Blessed Sacrament, the real presence of Jesus Christ in the Blessed Sacrament. These things are fundamental, because these are teachings that have been given to us directly from Christ. They're not inferences. Anyway, if you understand that, you understand that, yeah, I understand the Trinity. I could tell you the basics of the Trinity, but I'm never going to exhaust the beauty of that belief and that understanding of God existing as three divine persons with one nature. It's one. There is one God, right? And it doesn't make sense. And you have to sit and you have to think about it, because that's not how we see things. When I think three, right? But we know that there aren't three gods, because God has revealed that to us, right? The Lord your God is one God. That's from the Shema in Deuteronomy. You can look it up yourself. So, you know, understanding that and deepening our understanding of that should also temper the way that we communicate it. You know, even in my stumbling, rambling way here on this podcast, and we're diving inside the mind of mediocrities, I don't mind telling you, it's messy in there. It's very messy. If you were to turn all the lights on, I keep the light bill low so I don't turn all the lights on in the mind all the time. But if you were to look around, you notice that there's a lot of clutter. There's a lot of stuff. Random movie quotes would take up a lot of space. There are a lot of memories, some good, some bad, some weird, a lot weird. But when it comes to what I'll call the showroom, the things that I'm most proud of, those insights that I've received from studying sacred scripture, languages, and theology, philosophy, even those things have to be polished and curated and taken care of, and to just for me to just sit and think and meditate on the beauty of God's revelation of himself to us. So when I communicate this to you on my podcast, you know, I ramble, I say, I say, but, you know, horrible communication skills. But I beg your forgiveness for that, because even as I'm saying these things, sometimes I'm thinking and pondering them. And I think that's part of the beauty of revelation. I think that's part of the beauty of God's creation. You're never going to exhaust it. In fact, more often than not, you're going to come across things where, and the church says this, where we realize that our understanding deepens. That's what, when we talk about as Christians, when we talk about the mystery of faith, the mystery of faith means that mysterion, it's not something that's a Scooby-Doo riddle that has to be solved. It's something that needs to be entered into more deeply and more deeply appreciated, much like fine art. So I'm looking at the struggle that I have, and we probably all have, of communication. And my challenge to myself is my challenge to you, that as we deepen our understanding and as we begin to grasp loosely, as we begin to grasp truth and begin to understand it more fully than maybe some of the people around us, or maybe in a way that is different than other people around us have grown in their understanding. We can't both be right, but how do we have that conversation? How do we bring about the truth? You know, I have encountered several people in my life that have already drawn their conclusions, and they would expect me to jump to their conclusions with great ease when they don't take the time to understand how I arrived at my conclusions, to wonder if their conclusions were accurate, right? If there may not be a false premise there in their argument somewhere that they are failing to recognize, or if I'm being honest, is there something in my own process, a false premise in my own process that I have failed to recognize? And that's what communication helps flesh out. That's why it's good to ask questions. That's why it's good to continue to think. That's why it's good to be quiet sometimes and listen and take the time to understand. You know, you and I can disagree over favorite football teams all day. This has nothing to do with truth. This has everything to do with preference. And we can say probably on some objective scales, you know, teams that are more successful, right? But success doesn't necessarily determine your favorite. I know several people that have been Atlanta Braves fans for decades. The Atlanta Braves have enjoyed only limited success. I don't mind saying that because I'm not a Braves fan, but still, people are big Braves fans, right? So when we think about things that are really important, matters of truth, faith, and morals, these are things that need to be entered with respect and dignity. And you and I are challenged by God, who is not hiding himself. He says in Jeremiah that if we look for him, he'll let us find him. He's not hiding. He's wanting us to seek him with sincerity, though, and that requires humility. It requires a willingness to listen. It requires a willingness to come to a discussion thinking, I may not have all the answers. And even if I do, I need to listen and understand with whom I'm speaking. I need to understand where they're coming from. That's how dialogue works. We can't say dialogue if really all we want to do is for someone to come to our side. That's not dialogue. It's you know, dialogue implies, you know, two. At the same time, that doesn't mean that we don't need to be firm in our convictions, right? Everything with humility, everything with charity, and the way that we talk to each other, the way that we communicate, the way that we pursue truth. Because truth comes from God. Does it come from you? Does it come from me? Does it come from Facebook? Does it come from anything other than God himself? And so as the object and as the source of truth, he sets the rules. We just need to discover those and try to be faithful to them. So, and so that's what I'm thinking of. That's what's on the mind of Mediocrities that I've been dwelling on and trying to understand. You know, Thomas Aquinas was able to engage all the brilliant minds of his time, the brilliant minds of the past, and we still use him as a reference point for engaging minds today. So he's a great model for us to follow. And so I would recommend, if you don't already have access to Aquinas, that you do take the time to look at him. And he would be the first one to tell you that, you know, all of his best works, which we think are extremely brilliant, you know, are nothing compared to the grandeur of the fullness of truth that we see in the person of Jesus Christ, in God himself, God incarnate, Jesus Christ. Everything pales in comparison. And so it's not fruitless to study philosophy. It's not fruitless to study truth and to seek after truth. And we keep in perspective that the goal is not to make ourselves great. The goal is to understand so that we can better give God honor and glory and understand and operate in this world that he has created, and to help the people around us to understand and come to know him also. That is the union to which we're all called. We're not called to smartness. We're not called to ease. We're not called to having fancy cars or a lot of money. But if we get those things, that's wonderful. But we're all called to a fullness of union with God. And so in the pursuit of that, I wish you luck. I wish your friends luck. And I hope that we can dialogue on things like this. I mean, truly dialogue. I love to hear where you're coming from on issues like this. And as I mentioned before, you can use the show contact to reach out to me. And maybe we'll discuss your question in the Mind of Mediocrities. In our last segment, something old, something I've been thinking about for a while, that's kind of old, I guess, is arcades. Do you remember arcades? I can remember how much fun it was to get my report card and to know that I could take my report card to Showbiz Pizza. Look it up. I could go to Showbiz Pizza and could exchange my good grades for tokens to be used in their arcade. And I could take that same report card to Putt-Putt and use my good grades to get tokens for the arcade. And when I'll have to tell some Putt-Putt stories sometime too, but I'm just thinking about arcades and how much, I mean, the sound of an arcade, all these video game arcade cabinets going off at one time and people talking and just that, I can hear that rumble in my head. I wish I had an audio clip to play so that you could hear what that sounds like if you're not familiar with it. But if you are familiar, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just the noises of being in an arcade. And it was so social. I had such a good time playing in the arcade as a kid and a teenager, and just enjoying the atmosphere of being there. And if you got really good at a game, that people kind of crowd around you and watch you play, and how cool that felt to kind of be the guy or the girl that was playing that game really well. And, you know, the old rule, if you got next, then you would lay your quarter. You would lay your quarter on the kind of the bottom of the screen, right? So people know that you had the next game. And that's, you know, just that hierarchy, those rules of engagement for how we had it. And then when the combat games came out, where it was, you know, the fighting games, right? Then you had people lining up to try to take on the local champ. I can recall, and I guess I'll tell you one story. It wasn't my favorite story, but I can recall back when Mortal Kombat was relatively new, there was a guy in my high school that was unbeatable. And you'd last until he beat you twice and then you were gone and your quarter was gone. And so the manager at our Putt-Putt got so tired of him occupying that machine and basically holding court that when we came in one afternoon and he gave a friend of me quarters, just a cup full of tokens to use for the machine, just to learn how to get better at Mortal Kombat so that we could beat him. And I'm sorry to say it didn't work. But thanks for the free tokens. That was fun. But yeah, fighting games are just not my thing. That was not. In fact, most of my favorite games come from the early 80s. Those were really my favorite games. The ones that I'm thinking of, Moon Patrol. I can still hear the music in my head. Moon Patrol and Pac-Man and Dig Dug, Pango. I really enjoyed Pango. Crazy Climber, that was a fun one. Elevator Action. Yeah, I'm just remembering those games and how much fun it was, especially when a new game came in, and to watch the crowd around it. And yeah, I miss that. I wish there was something like that now. Because I've seen the Retrocades and the Barcades, and those are okay, but it's not the same. I mean, it's a bar with an arcade. It's a bar with a few video games. Eh, it's okay. But it's not nothing until someone actually builds an arcade. And there's just nothing like that anywhere near me right now. And I'll look. But the minute that something like that comes up, that's not a bunch of ticket redemption games like they have at Chuck E. Cheese now. You know, I don't want to play skee-ball all day. I want to play if I go to some kid's birthday party, I'm going to be getting some tickets, Jack. because I love playing games, but I wish there was a real honest-to-goodness arcade. Or if I ever win a lottery, I'm going to flip and build one. And, yeah, we'll have beverages too, but it's just going to be a straight-up arcade. So if that's something that you want to see happen, something you can make happen, something that's near you, I would love to hear about that. I'll drive to where you are if you've got a real arcade. That would be cool. Reach out to me at mediocritiespodcast@outlook.com or use the show notes to contact me. That would be fantastic. So that's it. That's it, y'all. I hope that you have an awesome day, that you enjoyed going to work in your kilt. Look forward to hearing from you. I'm having fun doing this. It's going to be more fun when we get more questions. And so if you like this podcast, tell your friends about it, rate it, review it, and spread the word.